Welcome to episode 32 of the Golf Betting System podcast. This week we are covering the US Open at Shinnecock Hills. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System. And with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Evening to you, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How are you doing?
Very good. Surrey just won in an innings, so I'm over the moon with that. Top of the county championship.
Very nice.
And podcast pundit Barry, how are you? Barry O'Hanrahan from A Good Talk Sport. How are you, Barry?
I'm so excited. This week is lining up amazing. I can't wait for this. Looking forward to this show.
I always use kid in a candy store. Can you come up with a better one?
Well, probably a few, but we would have to mark the podcast explicit then, so let's keep it clean.
I think I know where you're heading. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. I know we're going to have quite a few new listeners to the podcast as we're covering the second major of 2018. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Player FM, Podtail. Naturally, subscribe or follow the podcast and tell your friends about the show. If you can rate and review us on iTunes, that would be fantastic. New listeners this week, of course, so please take time to give your to give iTunes your positive feedback about the show. It spreads the word. Right, brilliant. Congratulations to Paul this week. 28-1 winner at the Shot Clock Masters. And just to really rub it in, he also landed a 150-1 full each way place at the same tournament. That's an absolute corking result.
That was, yeah. It was rather pleasing. He played really, really well, Cajon, didn't he? He was absolutely on top of his game. Tee to green, he was really strong. Didn't make a bogey, did he, until, was it the 9th on Sunday for the whole week? Very, very good. And yeah, as you say, Webster coming through. He was right in position, wasn't he? Halfway, Webster, and then he fell right away on Saturday, and then pulled it back round on Sunday to get himself a nice third place finish. And as you say, 150-1 place as well. So
that's profit and loss boosting. That'll show up at the end of the year. The other thing you said in that podcast last week was, we don't know how this is going to work, but just simply select players that are going to go well on the golf course. Mm. And he clearly loves that place. And you just about got 28-1 before it all disappeared, didn't you?
Yeah, it was. There were people pulling out left, right, and centre, weren't they? So yeah, it was there for a little bit longer after we went live. But Van Ruin and Van Rooyen. And Bermester both pulled out, didn't we? Didn't they? Kind of Tuesday lunchtime-ish. So that had another knock-on effect with the markets as well. But even so, he was still sixth or seventh favourite, something like that. And he never looked in doubt. And it's funny because he's been in some half-decent positions in the past, and he's not been the best of finishers by any stretch. But clearly it was his time, and he looked very.
He showed progress this year in that regard, though, didn't he? He wasn't disappearing completely. He was actually hanging around at the end of some tournament.
Yeah. And he was clearly playing some good golf. And as you said, I think that the critical point to take away from that was that, it was a new format. And actually, to be fair, the format went down very, very well with the players. And there's a lot of positive comments about it. It shaved just over half an hour off the average round time. So, mission accomplished from that perspective. And it wasn't just European Tour players who were lording it up either. There were a number of the PGA Tour players who obviously keeping a close eye and a keen eye on what's happening in that event. And it was kind of applause all round. So Keith was clearly pleased with his brainchild and the impact that it had. But did it have a massive impact on the outcome of the tournament? I'm not sure, really, because there was only really a handful of penalties that were dished out. I think the first 2 days there were none at all. So it was almost incidental, apart from the fact that obviously each of the shots were visibly being timed. But good all round. I think it was good for the European Tour. Nice little experiment. See where that leads them going forward. And as you say, in terms of a result, that was great financially for the week, really positive. Just a shame that Mr. Wesley Bryan didn't finished the job off last night and get us a nice 200-1 place that, you know, looked to be pretty pretty strong going into the final day, didn't it?
40-1, yeah.
Ah,
for the place. Yeah. He was an absolute game, wasn't it?
He's now taken top spot off Siwoo Kim for gambling enemies. That was cruel.
The whole game fell apart in the end, didn't it? He couldn't hit a green, couldn't do anything. I mean, that bunker shot on the last par five was absolutely abysmal. He couldn't even get it out of the bunker.
No. It was a shame. I was talking to a lad on Facebook last night who had two separate £50 each way bets on each way double bets on Webster and Wes Bryan, which would have paid combined just over $100,000. He wasn't very happy, as you can expect. He wasn't very happy at all.
The thing that got me about Wesley Bryan was, when you looked at him last year, when he got into the contention, he hung around. He was rock solid. That's the first time he's ever kind of been in the top three or four, going into a final round and capitulated.
Mm.
So I suppose it happens to all of them. And you'll probably find at some event later on in the year, he flies like at the Wyndham Championship and probably wins from about eight behind going into Sunday. So you've got to keep your eye out. But I think the idea of the bet was correct. I think Ryan Blaine was doing some good stuff as well. And then he had the audacity to get paired with the world number one that now is and absolutely had a lobotomy, which you could see happening anyway, because he's the sort that... he seems to get quite a few sort of 18th, 12th, 11th place finishes. Doesn't seem to really hang around that much.
Mm.
And that all became far too much for him on Saturday.
Yeah, it's either a bit boom or bust with Blaum, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of miscuts in there. You know,
he never bounced back like your man did on the Sunday. I was half hoping he might shoot something low on the Sunday because it would all feel so much easier now that he wasn't going to be on camera.
Yeah. Sometimes they've just got to get that bad round out of the system, haven't they? And it takes the pressure off completely. And then, you know, sometimes they have a strong enough round on the Sunday to actually get over the line, but.
He's another one, you know, like a barber soul or something like that in a few weeks' time. One of these second division events that no one really watches. That Blaum's the kind of one that will pop up, something like that.
Yeah, and again, the champion Bermuda link that we picked out with him.
He was first for strokes gained putting after 36 holes. Yeah,
precisely. He reacts on the surface, so, you know, it's well worth bearing in mind. I know there's three or four different events dotted over the course of the calendar, isn't there? So...
It's
certainly one to consider, regardless of his form, because
it does make your Sunday evening a little bit depressing. But you have to crack on, don't you? Shinnecock Hills this week. Let's get stuck in. I suppose the first question I'm going to ask you two is the obvious question. It's probably the question that everyone's asking. Can you see anyone outside of Dustin Johnson winning this week? What do you reckon, boys?
Go on, Barry. I'll let you say that.
You crack on, Baron.
Yeah, he's got to beat 155 other guys. That's a tough ask. It's never, as history points out, it's not a good thing to win the week before US Open. I don't think anybody's done it. So
it's difficult, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't okay. I know he got to 19 under, but he wasn't complete. You know, it didn't look like everything was totally on a string. You know, there was a lot of great play, but it didn't look complete. Now, that said, that could be the last kind of week of tweaking to get his game into perfect shape for this week. And if anybody can kind of just ride a win and kind of shrug it off as if it's no big thing and go on and win the US Open, it's a relaxed character like Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think there's so much competition out there. And I think we're going to, you know, through our picks throughout the show, we're going to make some very strong cases for those guys beating him next week and everybody else in the field.
For new listeners, we did a US Open preview, if you like. We recorded it last Thursday, wasn't it, chaps? And we released it on Friday. It's been very popular over the weekend. I almost call it like a prep sheet because... We covered off a lot of US Open trends, which Barry's alluding to there. We covered off a lot about the golf course, Shinnecock Hills. So if you want to know more about trends, skill sets of winners that, you know, when they've won this, coming into the event, the course itself. Just go back to the previous episode, which is episode 31, and we've got a whole hour there of US Open chat. So we're going to keep a little bit more to the actual players this week. All I will do, boys, I'll read out his stats from last week, because you know what we were saying about key stats. Greens in regulation, 10th. Total driving, 9th. Strokes gained off the tee, 4th. All round, 1st.
Strong.
Now, if he'd finished 2nd or 3rd, you'd be thinking, yeah, he's going to win it. But on the basis he won it, and on the basis that he's now world number 1, and there's the statistical trend that I put every year about only Tiger Woods winning it since 2000 as a reigning world number 1, it puts me off him. I mean, it's becoming clear from a lot of stuff that we're seeing on Twitter and Instagram. I know Ted Scott was tweeting something out about it the last couple of hours. He says it's a total bomber's course. Those are his words. It's really going to help the bombers this week. And you can see it's wide off the tee.
If you can keep it out of the fescue, yeah.
If you can keep it off the fescue. And it all depends how quick they're going to make the fairways, doesn't it?
Mm. Do you think the... Sorry, go.
If it plays really firm and fast and they let it get crazy on the... I can almost see a circumstance where I think they're going to let the fairways get really fast and they're going to have to water these greens, because these greens are firstly poana, secondly they're quite, you know, they're quite tilted. There's lots of different undulations on these greens, and if they don't water the greens, it's going to get way out of control.
Yeah, like 2004, that's where it kind of...
Especially with all these new runoff areas. I mean, 2004, they let the greens get out of control, but they knew all of the greens were surrounded with 4 inches of rough.
Mm.
That's not happening this week. So they're going to have to keep those greens receptive to a certain extent. And as we know, it looks like there's going to be 15 gusting 20-mile-an-hour wind in play across a few quite significant chunks of the tournament. So I think they'll let the fairways get firm. Really a lot of chase on the fairways, but they're going to keep those greens to a point where they'll actually accept shots. And I think that just really, really helps. Well, I mean, it helps everyone, but it has to help the bombers more than anyone else.
But then with two par fives on the course, one of which is a three-shotter for the vast, vast majority of the field.
Yeah, then one's reachable. Yeah,
one's reachable. One's borderline if you absolutely nail the drive.
Yeah.
That, to me, negates the impact of the bombers to a certain degree, because they'll be looking to take advantage. On a par 72, they'll be looking to take advantage of the four par fives to make a score there, to, you know, hang on with some of the other holes. They haven't got that privilege here. They've got two par fives, one of which is essentially going to be a three-shotter unless, you know, the prevailing wind's going, the wind's helping them out, or they nail a 350-yard drive and get there with a three-wood or a five-wood or something. But yes, for me, DJ is undoubtedly the right person to be favourite for this.
Yeah.
He was playing some far better golf last week. We've seen him take fields apart. We saw him take the field apart at the Century, the first tournament of the year. He clearly won by 6 yesterday. Will the impact of him being paired with Tiger Woods and Justin Thomas is in there as well as the third part of that that group, will that have an impact on how he performs? Because as we know, there's always a circus surrounded by any of the groupings that contain Tiger Woods.
That's not a great draw, is it? I don't care what way you look at that. Being drawn with Tiger, especially at a major, is not a good draw.
Well, it goes one or two ways with the players, but for the vast majority of those two ways, it's generally down, isn't it? It's, you know, concentration levels.
Yeah. Rosie loves it. Justin Rose, because he did well at the Memorial with Tiger a few weeks ago, and he said, "Oh, it just gets me on my game." And he got paired with him at Bay Hill in the third round, and again, he outplayed Tiger.
Yeah.
And he just says, "I love it." But you can do head-to-head numbers, can't you, on a lot of on a couple of websites. And I looked this morning, and Dustin Johnson hasn't played that much with Tiger recently, but when he has played with him, just in his career, it isn't a good look. There's a lot of 70s in there, put it that way. There's a lot of plus 70 scores.
Yeah.
Clearly he could walk it this week, couldn't he? I mean, he is the rightful favourite. I've got some significant doubts, though, personally.
You've got to be, at that price, you've got to be...
Yeah, you've got to be
110% sure. And you're almost all in with that, aren't you? It's 60% of your bankroll on the week going in on a win-only bet. So you fancy
that's
him, Barry?
That's balls deep, isn't it, at that price?
You fancy a bit of DJ this week, Barry?
Maybe on some fantasy teams if I can get a couple of sleepers, to offset his cost. Something along those lines, but from a betting perspective, no, not interested.
No.
What are your thoughts on McIlroy? He's second favourite at the moment, kind of jointly, to be fair. I mean, it's not a lot in it. There's some bookmakers have got McIlroy second favourite, some have got Rowe, some have got Justin Thomas. They're pretty much level. What do we think of McIlroy? In fact, let's be clear here as well. This is one of these really rare events. DJ is now world number one. It's going to keep happening all year. He's back to number one. Thomas, McIlroy, Rose and John Rahm can all get world number one this week. And I think in some circumstances that means nothing. I think in others that might just eke away at the back of mind slightly.
For the guys that have never been in that situation before, McIlroy's been there, you know, he's... Whilst he'd love to get back to world number one, I'm sure it's not going to be the be-all and end-all. Someone like Rose, I think that might impact him more. It might, you know,
I do, yeah.
It might be something that, going back to the DP World Tour Championship, where he had the chance to win the race to Dubai, and he was in position to win the race to Dubai going into the final nine, and it all dried up. Whether that's just incidental, whether it really was the, starting to impact his game, I'm sure you'd never fully get to the bottom of, but it happened there. Would this same thing happen again? Don't know.
I was quite smitten on Rose, but I don't know. I mean, you know, I keep records. Most of his wins in the States, he does like playing upstate, so, New York, great location for him. But you look, most of these wins are all on pure bent grass greens, and they're all on tree-lined golf courses in the main. That is, he doesn't grab me as the most natural. I know it sounds ridiculous from the way that he broke out all those years ago at the Open, but for me, he's not the most naturally links favourable player.
But often,
clearly, you know what I mean. You see where I'm heading.
Well, often with a links track, you're going to need to have a very sharp short game. As to, we don't really know how this is going to work because clearly the course has changed. Last time when Goosen won, he topped the charts for scrambling on the week. So clearly it was an important, very important factor that your short game was right up there. Lefty was second. I mean, that kind of rubber stamps that. Yes, they've shaved the banks here. That gives different options to players, and sometimes the players that aren't,
don't like it.
Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Go back to Kaimer when he won his US Open. He could take the putter from off of the putting surfaces quite regularly, couldn't he? In fact, I can't recall he chipped at all on that event.
No, he didn't.
This will have a similar set of options available to players now because of the way that they've set the course up. As to whether that favours or it's detrimental to some of the players remains to be seen, I guess.
Going back to your point, 37, never been world number one, won major. I think of those players, it would affect him most. Because it is a big deal for someone of his ilk,
yep.
Someone of his stature to become world number one and to win your second major all at the same time.
Yep.
I think he can either finish second, a solo second, and then, of course, it all depends on what Johnson's done.
Yeah.
And then I think it's something along the lines of Speed, McIlroy and Rahm after winning. I mean, you could also argue it's all secondary at the end of the day. It's a major championship.
Oh, yeah.
That's the biggest focus for all of these guys. Any positivity with you, Barry, Rory, Justin Rose, Justin Thomas, Jason Day?
Well, let's start with Rory. I don't know, something feels just a little bit off with him. It's if it's one thing one week, it's another thing the next week. You know, his putting's kind of gone a bit crap again. I don't know if he needs to go sit down and have a session with Faxon another time. Because, you know, he putted the lights out to win the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I don't know, is it his ball striking that's a little bit off? You know, he's not quite hitting those super high greens in regulation numbers, which, you know, as we were saying in the show last week, we think is going to be quite key this week. Then again, it's a major. If he steps it up, of course he can contend. And if he brings his A game this week, he'll win it comfortably. You could say that then for the other guys, you know, your Jason Day, Justin Thomas. I don't know. I'd love to see Rory win. He's got a lot of motivation to win a major. It's been 4 years since his last one. He'll probably feel like the other guys around him have been making a few more headlines than he has in the last while. And there's a big motivational factor for him. I'd have a little bit of concern if over his game, if those fairies get super firm and fast. The driving accuracy is not amazing. And if he gets a little bit risky with it, it could end up in a few catastrophic holes.
Yeah. Paul will back me up on this. Clearly, he was the 36-hole leader at Wentworth, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was playing some... And this is it. When he's playing well, he's playing really well. But then he'll wake up the next day and it seems that that's completely disappeared. There seems to be some rather... You know, it's like X and Y. It's big troughs, big peaks. But at Wentworth, that course started to firm up, didn't it? Saturday, Sunday, and he slowly slipped away.
Yep. And you can see something similar happening here, can't you? Because isn't the thunderstorms forecast for Wednesday?
There's likely. It's 50-50 right now. There could be thunderstorms on Wednesday. Now, if that happens, that's clearly a very big tick in the box for Rory.
Mm.
And if it doesn't happen, it will go the other way. He can play on firm golf courses. But whether he can play on a golf course that's really firm and it's blowing 20 miles an hour and it's US Open tough, I leave that one open, that question. Well, where are you at, Barry? Where are you on Rose and Thomas?
What
are your thoughts?
I like what we were saying about the mental factor for Rose. You know, the combination of getting to world number one with also, you know, trying to win a major. But he's won a US Open before, so he's going to have good vibes going into another US Open. You know, obviously he's been one of the top ball strikers around for the last 6 months, I guess. It's just been a pretty awesome display of golf. I think even on an off week for Rose, the way he's playing these days, he's probably going to top 10.
If you take Justin Rose over the last 6 months, I think he's probably the most consistent golfer out there, apart from Johnson and Justin Thomas, isn't he? You know, he's in his position in the world rankings on pure merit.
Oh, yeah.
He's been putting better for the last few months than he has done for a long time.
A lot better. And the scrambling. Mm. He's really sharpened up that short game, which for a guy of his ball striking ability makes him, you know, top notch, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, makes him very.
I know though, Barry, of the shorter prices. I know who you've gone for. So you tell us who you're after this week.
I have gone with Ricky Fowler. So, for many reasons, I'm a huge fan of his, but I also think that over the last year, 2 years, he's been tweaking his formula and slowly kind of putting the pieces of the puzzle together to get that first major win. He's been probably a little bit too conservative the last while, for the last few. But at the Masters, I think we saw, for me personally, I saw kind of a change in the way he went about it. And he turned on the aggression on Sunday from, I think it was about the eighth hole onwards. And he almost timed it perfectly, bar, Patrick Reed beating him by one shot. So that's really close, and that's almost getting the formula perfectly nailed down to get a major in his locker. Now, I think on an emotional scale as well, I think the fact he just got engaged last week, I think that's a huge, it'd be hard to put my finger on exactly what the, you know, what the thing is, but for a feeling, a good feeling of just well-being, contentment, you know, everything's great with the world, that has got to be up there with what, you know, the nappy factor. Maybe even a bigger thing at his at the stage of his life, it is. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of things coming together for Ricky. We mentioned Kapalua, the link course link last in the last podcast. He was fourth at fourth at Kapalua this year, and
core and Crenshaw course, yeah.
And you know, plays fast course as well, very strong in the wind, and you know the game's coming into good position at the moment. You know, he's got a new kind of new thing in his swing. He was a little bit concerned about when it doesn't work, it goes bad, but it's been getting more and more consistent, and that was shown at Memorial in his last outing. He was 75% of fairways and 72% of greens, so there's a lot of converging trends to push him into the right spot for me, and yeah, I've gone in pretty heavy on him. So
don't forget, he was second at Pinehurst number two, which was another Core and Crenshaw renovation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got previous, isn't he?
Yeah.
Can I just ask the question, because I can't remember. What was the situation with Sergio when he won his first major last year? Something had just happened there as well, hadn't it, with his lady?
Didn't he just get engaged before that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought so.
I think you could be right.
Is that right? Is that right, Paul?
He may have just got married, actually, because they had their first baby not long before this year's renewal, didn't they? So if you work back the mathematics, then I suspect it was probably their marriage. It was probably their wedding, as opposed to...
He got married on July 29th last year. That's not from memory. It's just a quick search. So I'll have to see if he can find the date when he got engaged while we're talking.
Something had happened, I'm sure, because he, you know, it was all well, you know, he's the happiest he's ever been, and a lot of people clocked on that.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right then. It probably was his engagement. It must have been a pretty quick turnaround. Yeah.
All right, there we go, guys. At the beginning of last year, so in January last year, so you know, there was a little bit of time, but it was the next major after that they got engaged, and similar circumstance for Ricky right here.
I remember when I got engaged to the good Lady Bamford, and there was a lot of stress in the build-up. You got to, you know, sort the ring out. Then you've got it's all weighing on your mind about how you're going to do it. Is it going to go well? What's the response going to be? And it builds up and it builds up. And I don't care who you are or what level of life you are. If you're a professional golfer or you're just, you know, the honest Joe on the street, it's going to have the same effect. So to get a great outcome and for everything to be tickety-boo, I think that's going to have a massive positive uplift in Ricky's mind. And you may have guessed, I've tipped him up as well. 2.5 points each way, 20-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. I'll tell you the thing I noticed, Barry, you might have read it as well on my piece that went out. 65-67 over the weekend at Augusta, and as you said, he only ended up one shot shy, didn't he? And he birdied the last, didn't he, to put the real pressure on Reed to make a par.
Mm.
And that was with all that hullabaloo of everyone getting on Jordan Spieth. We, you know, they all wanted Spieth to win it, and Ricky was very popular as well. And I do like the fact, and he does seem to be great at this. And I still think this is a Butch Harmon thing at peaking. I don't think he's really interested at a Colonial or a Memorial. He's just there working his game and getting it to a state that he's happy with. My only concern with Ricky, and we know this, he's a hunter, isn't he? He doesn't like to be hunted. So actually, if you've got lots of people that, oh, you know, Ricky's the first round leader on Thursday, oh, that to me might almost be a negative. For me, I'd just like him to be just tucked in the slipstream Thursday. You know, just up there in the top 10, just sitting there nice and chilled. Because, as we know, to this point, when he's actually leading the pack at tournaments, he doesn't convert brilliantly, does he?
It's that position that he finds himself on Saturday night is the critical one for me. If he's got to be far enough from the lead for it not to be an issue, but close enough to the lead that he can actually catch him.
So half a shot.
Well, something like three shots is probably almost ideal. I think, what was he? Was he five behind going into the final day at
No, he was seven behind. Seven behind, yeah. Seven shots behind runaway leader Patrick Reed. Sorry, he was seven shots behind runaway leader Patrick Reed after Friday. So, yes, I expect he was three or four behind on Saturday, which for him is pretty perfect.
It gives him a chance, doesn't it? You look at that and you say, well, if there's one player who's going to come and shoot that 62, 63, whatever the number needs to be, then Ricky Fowler is that player. If Ricky Fowler is three shots ahead going into Sunday,
you're
laying him, aren't you? Because you think, well, you know, this isn't how he converts.
Yeah, I can see that. That's very logical. So when it doesn't mean he doesn't win this week, though.
No, not at all. It's about his position. It's about how the first 3 days of the tournament pans out, which will then, you know, help determine how the fourth day pans out. Ultimately, Barry, if he's making some bogeys on Saturday that's pushing him two or three shots behind, it might be a better thing.
Yeah, I'd rather him be closer to the lead or in the lead than having to make up shots at the US Open. Depending if the conditions get soft and the guys can go chasing birdies, that's great. But I don't know, US Open, it's not the... I don't like the idea of the guy you have a bet on needing to make up some shots. Because that's the kind of course. It's the kind of course that can chew you up when you start getting a bit aggressive with it. By the looks of it, only time will tell when it starts playing out. But I do agree with you with the theory behind it that he is better as a hunter than the hunted.
Here you go. I'll read this out to you. Path to victory. Yeah? Brooks Koepka was second going into Sunday, as was Dustin Johnson. Jordan Spieth was first, Martin Kaymon was first, Justin Rose was fifth. The one that really screws that up was, if you remember, at the Olympic Club, which was a really weird US Open, Webb Simpson was eighth going into Sunday. But yeah, if you could get Ricky just one or two shots back, just tucked in there, just behind the leader Saturday evening, I think it's all systems go.
Should we just end the podcast there then, yeah?
I'll jump in as well because I've gone for another short price. For me, the other guy that I like this week, I've got a feeling, I reckon around about 8-10 under might win this week. That's just where I'm kind of at with it. I don't think it's going to be as tough as Oakmont. I don't think they can get the greens as firm. I think the wind's going to be there to make it tricky. I could see a 10-11 under winning this. And for me, if you just look at the way that he plays, if you look at how aggressive he is off the tee, if you see his key numbers for the last time at Colonial, you know I love all this. He finished fifth. He was second for greens in regulation. He was ninth for total driving. He was second for strokes gained off the tee. And he was 12th in all round. And that was the best set of numbers I found across the whole field in the preceding tournament, and we went through the trends last week. And for me, you look at him, first tournament as a professional, he was fourth at Congressional, US Open, US Open track. He won his first PGA Tour title on Poana at Torrey Pines, another US Open track. Fifth at Pebble Beach, again on pure Poana. I think he made his New York State debut last August, finished third behind DJ at the Northern Trust Open. I can't remember the name of the golf course, but that was pure Poana. Second at Kapalua behind DJ in January, Coren Crenshaw course. I personally think John Rahm's going to have a good run this week, so I'm on Rahm. I think 20-1 about him is a decent enough price for me. And the stat I managed to work out this morning was, if you actually look at him since he became pro, he has delivered a win or an each-way full payout 44% of his outing, which I think is absolutely phenomenal. So even at 20-1, I mean, if he comes in the top, I backed that with Bet365, if he comes in the top eight, you've covered your week. So for me, I'm going Fowler and Rahm at those 20-1 price points. Mm. So they're the two that I've gone for at the very top of the market. And that then precludes me, really, from going any on the tips for going for any of those kind of mid prices, your Stensons, your Brandon Graces, who everyone is over like a rash at the moment. Quite rightly, Tommy Fleetwood, people of that ilk, Mark Leishman. I also see Francesco Molinari's been backed from Pill at the Post this morning.
Yeah, he's been backed off the board, hasn't he?
He doesn't feel Molinari to me, this, but each to their own, I suppose.
Well, he's clearly playing well, isn't he? Obviously, well at Wentworth. He does react better on faster greens as well, Molinari. So I can see the logic.
He's a ball striker. I mean, for me, if you said to me, do you want a stake in Molinari this week or at a similar price, a stake in Mark Leishman, I know where I'd be heading personally.
We're just before we drift off, Ram, just to add a couple of maybe tenuous course links, but I think they will apply here. The win at Port Stewart last year in the Irish Open, like very...
Well, you were there,
weren't you? And that's a very undulating links course with winds to deal with, firm, fast fairways, and he just put on a display. He was picking lines and, you know, that other guys weren't even seeing. And he has that ability to do that with the long ball. And then also, I thought the Open de España this year, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, the course didn't look amazing, but it did have that, you know, had that undulating, fast links-like feel to the course. And, you know, he put on a great display on the Sunday to break our hearts, because I think I was on Paul Dunne. I'm not sure. I think you guys might have been as well.
We all were.
Oh God, that was that the day that Dunne and Siwu. That was the weekend. Dunne and Siwu. I had the double on the both of them. So yeah.
That's right. You guys thought you were going to be multi-millionaires, and then it all started unraveling.
Oh, did it what?
Yeah, on WhatsApp.
Yeah, went full Wesley.
Let me read this out, and I do love that point, Barry. It did dawn on me that one at Ballyliffin, and I know that it was quite a low score, but it just shows you these courses he plays well at. People go, oh yeah, at the Players' Championship, his record's awful, and this is very, well, it's not really very similar, is it? Because at the Players' Championship, everyone's hitting driving irons and they're hitting three woods, or because that course makes everyone do the same thing. Here, on a big, wide course where he can hit that driver as hard as he wants, and at the moment he's hitting tons of fairways and he's hitting it just arrow straight to a certain extent. I think this is the kind of course where he actually comes to the front. Listen to this. This is Poa and Niua. I rank across PGA Tour tournaments rolling 5 years. If I look at the top performers on Poana, Jason Day tops it. Dustin Johnson second. Paul's favourite US Open bet, Brant Snedeker, he's third. Then we've got Jordan Spieth, Jimmy Walker and John Rahm. And John Rahm has only been on the tour. This will be it's not even 2 years, this tournament, because he turned pro a couple of weeks after the Oakmont US Open. So he's been on tour less than 2 years. He already ranks sixth in my rankings for Poana. He clearly likes the putting surface, yeah?
Yep.
So I he'd be the kind of guy that I would go, well, actually, I don't think he's a US Open sort. He ain't got the... But actually, I think if this does turn into a little bit... I've got the feeling, reading Phil Mickelson's comments from his visit last week, he said it's the fairest US Open course that he's seen for 25 years. And he says... Good players will be rewarded and good shots will be rewarded. And at the end of the week, there's going to be no luck involved. The best player of the week will win the tournament. And that gives me a little bit of hope with Rahm, because I think he's playing some fantastic stuff. And I do like him. What he's done in the first 2 years of his career is absolutely phenomenal. It's better than Spieth did over the first couple of years. Because Spieth struggled for wins at the very outset, and then, of course, 2015, it all clicked, and they all came one after the other. But what Rahm's done in the first, 102 weeks of his professional career is unbelievable. So I just think he's got a real chance, and He's played so well at the Masters, so he's got that off his back now. He knows that he can contend at majors, and that was firm and fast. I just think he's a great shot this week.
I think with Rahm, it will come down to a couple of factors. Firstly, how tough it really does play. Because if it's a grind and level par is...
If it's level par, he won't win.
Then he'll get too frustrated with it. If it's 7, 8, 10 under, he's got a chance, I think. But that will come down to whether he can control his emotions for full 4 days.
Yeah.
And when he was playing at home, he won the Spanish Open, and clearly he was very happy. Yeah, he was happy to be playing there. He knew the course. Didn't have a great field to beat there, and kind of sauntered round and won it at a canter, really. A US Open isn't going to be like that. If things go wrong, if he a bad drive into the fescue, whatever it ends up being, that then switches him, and you know, suddenly that's you're seeing angry John.
Yeah, that doesn't bode well.
That doesn't bode well, no.
I do like his grouping though. Him, Sergio and Rafa for the first two rounds. I think that's perfect for him.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, good comfort factor.
That'll keep the lid on it, I think, because he's got these two boys, these two Spaniards with him. And they it can be like the Conquistadors for the first two rounds. They'll love it. As long as Sergio plays half decent.
Yeah.
Clearly, if he's dragging them down at 12 over after sort of 18 holes, it might not be so good.
Yeah.
I think Cabrera Bello's got half a decent chance as well. I don't think that's the worst of long shots.
Mm.
Right, where are you two at then? Because I've been nattering on for too long. Tell the listeners who you've backed.
I've got, I have Stenson. I've had him, I got him on the exchange a good while back, and about 40s. So, he's probably my favourite golfer. So just to run through a couple of reasons why. He's already a major winner. He's got Lynx pedigree. His ball striking is just out of the off the charts this year. He's first in strokes gained approach to the green this year. He's 13th off the tee, and that's pretty much without using a driver, as we all know. At the FedEx St. Jude, he was 75% fairways, 76% of greens, although his putting was, so cold, ice cold, it wasn't even, there's no way he can put that bad again 2 weeks in a row, or at least I'd like to think so. And his last three tournaments for greens and regulation, he's been 83%, 78%, 76%. So that kind of fits in nicely with the greens and regulation. And he shouldn't need to putt so amazingly well, as we discussed last week. So
no, it's not a putting contest. It's a avoid three putt contest.
Yeah, exactly. So look, I'm dead happy to be on board at the price it got. And so yeah. Go Henrik.
I'm on it. Yeah, I'm on him anti-post, yeah. So listeners know that. I'm on anti-post as well. So, yeah.
Do you want to jump in with one, Paul, and then we can go back and forth? Or?
Yeah. Well, I've backed 5 so far in total, and I might not go much deeper than that because I'm quite happy with it. I have backed Brandon Gray, so I've got him at 45s, and clearly he has been backed off the boards today and he's down to as low as 25s in some spots.
25-1 with Coral. I'm
not interested in that.
That's mad.
You know, for me, 45s was probably the borderline as to whether I went in or not. And 45s with 8 places early today, I thought, well, that's worth
taking. If I could have grabbed 50-1 when we published, I'd have been all over him like a rash.
Yeah.
But I can't take those.
No, and if you wanted the 10 places or, you know, some of the extended places now, even, what's the time, 6 o'clock on Monday, you're really compromising the price. You really are compromising.
If you're happy to take 5 places each way I caught the odds with Ladbrokes, get on there quick because he's 40-1, but whether that's there in the morning, highly debatable.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the reason he's being backed in is quite valid. He has a very, very strong Lynx pedigree. He's just had a baby. We talked about the engagement factor, you know, the nappy factors, we've talked about it ad nauseum, so I won't go into that anymore. His history, was he a Dunhill Lynx champion, Fancourt 2 or 3 times, he's won there. Clearly reacts on this kind of surface. We talked about Qatar and the Doha Link on the previous show. There's an awful lot to like.
And he's good on Poana as well.
Yeah, he is, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for me, if he is going to win a major, and I suspect he has got one in him, then it's going to be on this kind of setup. It's going to be on this kind of links or faux links kind of course that he does react on so well. If the weather forecast, the wind forecast is slightly stronger than it was when we talked last week, and I think that will help him as well. He's got a fantastic low ball strike, which is ball flight, which is well suited to this format of the game. So it's no surprise to see him pop up and perform so well on links or links type tests. So yes, I think it's all about whether you at the price on offer you can justify taking the chance in this field against what is clearly an elite field where, you know, one of the top players could quite conceivably have the week that they that would see them walk away with a title. So
we know he's a genuine grinder as well, don't we? We know that he could grind. He's done it at Chambers Bay, he's done it at Oakmont. He's a good bet.
The other one, again, these are guys that you've mentioned, so you obviously know exactly where I'm going, Steve, without me even needing to tell you. Leishman I've backed. I got him 80-1 earlier with a boost. Generally, he was 66. Again, I've had to compromise there and take five places, but for me, Leishman's either going to contest and contend and be kind of that top five type of finish, or he'll be nowhere near it. It's, he's in that kind of run now where he's either getting top tens, he was second at Byron Nelson. And interspersed with that, you've got miscuts and some, far weaker overall performances. So I don't mind taking a longer price there at a higher price with fewer places, just to satisfy me my curiosity.
He top 10 at Augusta and he was second after 36 holes, wasn't he? So he's clearly playing some great stuff.
Yeah, and again, from a major links perspective, he's got the pedigree to suggest that he can perform on this type. And if I think Grace has got a major in him, I think Leishman's got a major in him. Both of those guys have got an opportunity, I think. And the third one is Brant Snedeker, who I've backed. I thought it was interesting to see him pop up last week. Clearly he's had some injury issues over the last few months. If I go back, one of the correlating courses that we've talked about is Torrey Pines, in terms of being firm and fast, in terms of it's being pioneer surfaces, a tricky test. And Snedeker's got an outstanding record at Torrey Pines, twice a winner there. To combine that with, clearly he has had some links success at the majors in the past without actually getting over the line, but clearly he's been in contention. I forget which of the Open Championships it was now that he was leading after 36, but I think it was the one that
Scott threw away. Els came through.
Clearly he can play that kind of that kind of format of event and course, and he popped up. Did he shoot? Was it 62 in round two or three last week? One of those standout rounds.
He shot a decent round on Saturday,
So 62 on the this is St Jude, so last week. Yeah, so he shot 62 on round two last week. So clearly there's some underlying form there, and I thought 110-1, and that's been nibbled in as well this morning, as you'd expect. I thought that was well worth a little nibble myself. My fourth one I won't go through because it's the same as your final tip, Steve, so I'll leave that with you. The absolute bomb that I've gone with is Scott Stallings.
Interesting.
And I've taken him at 1,000 on the exchange. And again, if you look, he's got a fantastic Torrey Pines record. He's won there. He finished. He lost a playoff to Jason Day, I think, the year after as well. But what got me, after a run of really poor form, he was 30th last week. He was 10th going into the final round. But he topped the total driving stats. He was third for ball strike and he was fifth for all round. He's clearly found something in his game. Now, if you go back to earlier in the season, he finished 7th at Pebble, 4th at Riviera. There's some correlation with both of those courses, I think. And often with Scott, he has these very short, sharp purple patches of form and then goes right off the ball again. And I'm not suggesting he can win this because I suspect it probably is a little bit too much. I want to find a market for him for my extended markets piece that's going out tomorrow. But as a trading opportunity, 1,000, I think that's worth taking. And let's assume he does get himself into some kind of semi-contending position, then I can do some trading on Betfair with him at that price.
Have you got any thoughts on triple odds players of any ilk like that?
Yeah.
What do you think, Darren?
I have a couple of others. So I'm also on Leishman. He's shown up in the majors. He's had a cracking performance recently at the Byron Nelson. Everything was on fire.
Corin Crenshaw design.
Part of the reason it's a little bit weird, it's a little bit messed up, but I'm sure we all put bets on like this because we're gamblers. But it's out of fear, because I'm convinced the guy wins a major at some time, and when I'm not on him, I have epic fear every major I'm not on him. So it's almost like an emotional saver. So I'm on Leishman.
So that worked really well for you at the Open that Henrik won.
Yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, that was a great Open. Leishman has said it time and time again how he loves playing in windy conditions. You know, he grew up playing in much windier conditions than they'll face this week. So and firm and fast courses, so it'll fit right in his wheelhouse. He'll feel very comfortable on this course. Yeah, have him on board. I've gone for Matt Kuchar as well. I don't know. I like to think, in a kind of a romantic sense of the of golf history, that Kuchar does get a major, and he's just so unremarkably solid across the board and all the stats, and he's a bit of a machine for popping into the places in majors, and you never know, he might just pop and get a win. His last outing at Memorial, he was pretty solid across the boards. And one thing I noticed was he was -4 on the par threes for the week, which was superb ball striking around Muirfield, and that's the kind of thing that'll help him a lot at a US Open. And I think Matty's a very patient player as well, and if it does, the going gets tough, he can grind it out with the best of them. On to a couple, so they're kind of the mid-level odds, and I have a couple of long ones. I took Adam Scott on the exchange at 120s, which I just couldn't ignore because his long game is absolutely off the charts at the moment.
He's probably the best in the field, to be fair.
In recent form, yeah, he could be for sure.
It's top notch, mate. It's top
his
notch.
Putting is just like sub-zero. It's just so bad at the moment. But
he makes Henrik look like I was going to say Jordan Spieth, but that'd be wrong these days.
Vintage Spieth,
like Justin Thomas, for example.
Just a couple of interesting little things that came to my attention this week. So he was messing around practicing with the short putter, but he says he's going to play with the broom handle, just holding it away from his chest. And then something came through today on one of the Golf Channel emails saying that he ditched his regular caddy and he's taking a local caddy, Lenny Bomolo, this week. And they've teamed up before. And one thing was interesting, Scott used him during casual rounds of Shinnecock over the last few years, including one round back in 2013 when he set the course record from the championship tees. So a bit of kind of a familiarity, feel-good factor around the place. And, he's got a major to his name, so he has that experience. And he could just have a half-decent week with the putter, and he'll be there.
He's been playing well enough, hasn't he, Scott?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all relative, yeah? So don't shoot me down in flames, and don't shoot me down if you're listening. But his putting has slightly improved since he's gone back to the broom putter.
A little bit, yeah.
It's all relative. But as we know, this isn't going to be a putting contest. But, there will be points in the tournament, most likely, when he misses a par putt from 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be holding your head in your hands. But, I mean, the numbers, his ball striking numbers are absolutely phenomenal right now.
Yeah.
They are crazy. If I could find them, I'd write, here we go. So at Memorial, last outing, 8th of greens in regulation, 6th for total driving, 1st for strokes gained off the tee. And you know what we were saying last week, that's a lovely set of numbers. And then his all-round number gets dragged down because of the putting to 17th. But he's in good nick, isn't he? Undoubtedly.
Yeah, for sure. And at the Byron Nelson, he had 89% of greens and 91% of fairways.
I was on him that
phenomenal.
Week.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Anyway,
I watched the puppy.
Yeah, yeah, with a blindfold.
But you say that. I mean, that he shot something like 16 under that week and was putting terribly. Mm. So at a US Open, where that isn't going to be a factor, he makes a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah.
Can I just, with Scott, one stat that really stuck out to me when I put these numbers together for the site this week was from 29 majors that he's played since the start of 2011, he's finished in the top 20 18 times out of 29. So he tops that stat. Now, you're not going to get rich on this particular bet, but he's 5-2 currently with a number of firms to finish top 20. So
it's too big, isn't it?
Given the ratio that he's achieved over that period of time, and, you know, as you guys have said, he's shown a bit of form. He's certainly shown some form with his long game, and, you know, he may have found something marginal with the putter, I guess. You know, if you're a top 20 punter, then I think there are
I think it's interesting, Paul, that, and the, you know, what Barry was saying, the fact that he has gone to a local caddy, I mean, that sounds like a really smart move.
Mm.
A caddy that's they're going to know absolutely every nuance of that golf course.
Yeah.
And we know that Scott's game, power, is wide off the tee. That's what he likes. You know, he's not the straightest. But we know that his greens and regulation numbers are fantastic. His scrambling is major championship quality. You know, so I think that's a very, very strong bet. I'm seeing 66s, or even with Paddy Power, 60-1, 10 places each way.
Yeah, you'd be happy with that. And one final point on it is that he actually qualified to get into this, so he's going to feel like he's free rolling.
Yeah. Keep that roll going.
I've one final bet. Big fan of his, and a couple of his last four events, he's been 5th, 21st, 5th, and 43rd last week. He's long enough off the tee. He's not very accurate, so the wide fairways will suit him a lot, but he's obviously playing very good golf at the moment. And the final thing that kind of tipped it for me to really go for it was that one of his really good mates, Brooks Koepka, won the US Open last year. So I've backed Peter Uihlein at 150-1 with Bet365, 8 places.
Yeah, could see him going.
Yeah, he did the business for you the other week, Barry, didn't he? So,
the wide fairways will suit him, that's for certain. And he's certainly long enough. Yeah. He's as long as you like. I've got three. I mean, I'm going to, for listeners, I'm putting out my long shot piece tomorrow, Tuesday. But three, I think, have got a good chance at triple digits. I'm already on... Well, to be fair, what am I talking about? I've got Jimmy Walker at 80-1. I did get him 100-1, didn't I? He's just been backed in. That's what's confused me. I've got Jimmy Walker at 100-1 with Bet365. I also do like the look of Shane Lowry. I think we remember him a couple of years ago at Oakmont. He likes Poana. He's hitting the ball really cleanly at the moment. I can see Lowry going well. Loves coastal golf. Great scrambler. Has a really good record at place, you know, like the Open Championship. I think Keegan Bradley might surprise a few this week. His ball striking numbers are absolutely phenomenal at the moment, Bradley. Third for GIR at Memorial, fourth for total driving, fourth for strokes gained off the tee. And a bit like Adam Scott, because his putting isn't the best, he was 20th all round. But I think Bradley at anything up to 150-1 could be a decent bet this week. And the other one I like, and Paul, I know that you're aware of this individual because we kind of found out at the same time, is Big Bad Gary Woodland, who loves Poana.
He's a good bet, Gary.
A decent record at Torrey Pines, a very, very good record at Pebble Beach as well. And he played very, very well last time out at Memorial. 23rd, he finished. He was 8th for greens in regulation, 5th for total driving, 5th for strokes gained off the tee, and then the real shock, he was 3rd in the all-round category. That set of stats is probably, for me, second only to John Rahm going into this. And yes, yeah. People go, oh, Gary, choke, blah, blah, blah. But if there's a golf course that's going to suit somebody of his ilk, this is it. I think...
Yeah, Woodland, I can see him going well.
Yeah, he could be a good shout list. I think Woodland's got at least a top 10 in a major in him. Don't forget, he finished, second in a World Golf Championship match play to McIlroy. I mean, he can mix it at the highest level when he's on.
Yeah. It's just the Sundays just got to go right for him. And, you know, the clearly a lot of Sundays earlier in the season didn't go right.
And then he won in Phoenix. A lot
of people off. Then he won in Phoenix, yeah. And it all did go right that day. So, on their day, everything clicks. Away they go. And Gary's got the raw skills to contend in. I've got no doubt about that whatsoever.
Anything else to add, gentlemen, before we close?
No.
No, I've got the first round leader punts, which I've been working through today. So they'll be going out tomorrow afternoon. So
we'll link them on the description on Podbean.
Yeah, we'll put those on as well. For those of you who like to have a first round leader bet.
All I will say to close, it does make, I mean, you can't tell sitting here on a Monday or a Tuesday, but you need a player to, if you've got aspirations for the win, they have to be up with the pace from the very outset. So hoping for a good start on a Thursday is absolutely essential. But, yeah, in the case of Ricky, we don't want him leading.
Yeah, tied for lead is fine.
I'd take a tie for third or fourth, quite nicely, just one shot behind the leader, something like that. That'd be great.
Yeah, listen, I'm really looking forward to seeing this golf course. What I've seen on social media and with previews and reading about it, there's a great piece on the Fried Egg about the course and all across the net. I'm really excited to see this golf course and how it plays, and I hope the weather cooperates and we get to see it play as the USGA would like it to play. You know, firm and fast, but a good test and fair. So at the end of the week, whatever happens, there are bets. You know, you'll be able to go, you know, tip the hat to the champion and say, well done, they played the best.
Yeah.
Totally
agree.
Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure as always. I'll speak to you again next week. And thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Golf Betting System US Open podcast for 2018. We'll see you again very soon. Thank you and goodbye.